So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting, anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate. It's okay to have opinion. But really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this Hunter Initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about training to hunt, and being a better archer through training. I'm a big proponent of like sports specific training and doing drills and so on and so forth to improve your not only your confidence, but improve the overall experience of your hunt. So today we have with us on the phone, we have Christian Williams of Archery Strong, and we're going to pick his brain a little bit and hopefully get a couple questions answered. What's going on, man?
How are you, John? Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm good. I'm good. It's funny. I actually just got back from physical therapy right now. I was thinking about it while I'm lying on the table and getting worked on, you know, about this podcast and some of the things that I was going to ask you. One of the things that I'm dealing with right now, you know what? I'm going to save it for a little bit later, maybe, but I actually hurt myself last season, and I've kind of, it's still bothering me, you know, and
yeah,
it's not 100% like impeding me, but it is having a small effect on my ability to shoot well and to hold back and draw concealed and all that stuff.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we forget that any amount of pain is a little bit of an alarm system for your body. And I think whether it is a lot of pain or even just something real small and nagging that's been sticking around for a while, it does affect you overall. It kind of surfaces to the front of your mind when you're trying to do something, whether it is training or shooting or heck, even just stuff around the house and daily life. And that's where it gets frustrating too. I know probably all of us that are physically active have at least a little bit of ache and pain or aggravation. And I know for me, with some of the stuff that I do in the training, my knee will bug me, or I'll play with different things with archery to see how it affects me or what it feels like so that I can give insight to other people. And it's a game that we all have to play when we're active. It's kind of the cost of not sitting on the couch.
Yeah. Yeah. Damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the nature of it, unfortunately, but it's worth it.
Yeah, for sure. So real quick, why don't you give us a rundown about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, my name is Christian Williams. I am the owner of Archery Strong, and Archery Strong takes a sports specific approach to injury prevention and enhancing performance when it comes to archery. So we look at a lot of other sports, whether it be golf or baseball, or soccer, or whatever it might be. And as our understanding in the field of exercise has come to find that you can improve specifically for a sport or for an activity or for a task by utilizing training that applies and transfers well to that task, we can, again, improve performance. For archery, that's talking about improving your ability to hold steady, your ability to hold a draw, your ability to draw, your ability to maintain accuracy over a large number of shots, a bunch of different variables. And then also we can prevent injury by making sure the body is prepared for the things that archery demands, as well as when we do encounter the problem of pain, what we can do to address that. So we offer a lot of different insights and advice based on the biomechanics and the anatomy of the body and how it relates to archery, offer programs and training and some different things, but with the overwhelming goal to make sure that your shooting and your season isn't hindered by either poor performance or pain. And that's where, again, the sports performance and sports injury side is applied to archery.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I'm a big believer. My background is actually in I went to school to become a physical therapist. I have a degree exercise physiology. You know, I hold several professional certificates and so on and so forth. So I was a CSCS. So I'm really into that stuff, you know. Sure. Like I mean, looking at me, you probably wouldn't think it. But in my head, it's all there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always been one of those guys that tries to optimize his training or gear his training towards my end goal, which for me most of the time is hunting. You know, there was a couple of years in there where maybe I was optimizing it to look good on the beach, but
sure, as most of us guys do at one point or another, right?
But for the most part, it's been about hunting. So, yeah, I've had a couple guys on, that were, you know, that are in the field, and everybody that I've had on, I shouldn't say everybody. It was another gentleman that I had on that was very into like the sports specific. Everybody else didn't believe in sports specific training.
Yeah.
And I understood from their aspect that only sports specific training is actually doing the sport.
Sure.
So I know it's like interpreting the definition of it, but, do you feel like there is things that you can be doing that are specific to the sport that actually improve, or do you have to actually go out and shoot your bow to become a better bow shot? Like, you know, just shoot your bow to become a better bow shot.
Yeah. So that's a great question. And I think it's most important to lead that answer with the idea that I don't think it's ever black and white, in the sense that I don't think it's fair or accurate in most scenarios to say, you know, hey, there's no such thing as sports specific training, or you won't get better unless you do sports specific training. It's not that black and white. Now, with that being said, I think both are very important. And I think both are incomplete without the other one. And what I mean by that is, if you take a sport, you can absolutely become phenomenal at that sport by just playing the sport. I mean, you know, we might be going a little bit back here, but, you know, I'm pretty sure Larry Bird and Babe Ruth, you know, weren't doing banded exercises and, you know, different things like that. So you can absolutely build a phenomenal ability by just playing the sport. The idea of sports specific training is to take it to the next step and the next level. And I think it's also important to remember that sports specific training, like you mentioned, lies a lot in the definition. So in my opinion, sports specific training, you know, really can be anything that's not the sport itself that is helping you improve in the sport that you're training for. So for instance, you look at a soccer player, right? Or no, let's say you look at a basketball player, and you look at that basketball player, and that athlete is doing suicides. Now, in a sense, you're training fairly specifically for the sport, in the sense that you're going to have to maintain a fair amount of aerobic capacity throughout that sport, or you're going to have to cut and continuously run up and down the court. So it might not appear to be ultra specific, but that's an example of something that's mildly specific. Now we could go to the other end of the spectrum, and this is where the approach that we often take is, you can really refine the sports specific training down to something like archery. And when we're talking about archery, we're thinking about, okay, archery is very shoulder dominant. What do the shoulders need to be able to do to sustain proper form, technique, and be able to handle the physical demands that archery requires? So going back to your question, when you say, can you just do the sport and get great, or do you need sports specific training? Often what sports specific training does is a principle called overreaching. And overreaching is essentially training beyond the extent that your sport is going to require, so that when you go to engage in the actual sport, you've over prepared. So it essentially becomes easy. So a very simple example is, if I constantly train by shooting my bow and holding a 5-pound bow out in front of me, but all of a sudden I start doing kettlebell work where I do kettlebell raises with a 10 or a 15-pound kettlebell, all of a sudden that 5-pound bow is going to seem lighter. I'm going to be able to hold it more steady. That's a very simple example. But again, it's that principle of overreaching. So again, I think engaging in the sport and doing potential training that is going to transfer into that sport, I think they're both very important. I think they're potentially incomplete without the other, because there are specific components that you're not going to get if you had not either done the sport or trained for it.
Right. Okay.
Nah, I'm with you. I agree. And that's what that's my view in it. I don't think that a guy, let's talk about hunting, not specifically about archery. I don't think a guy that can run a 5-minute mile is going to be any more successful at hunting, but because he's trained himself to run that and his cardio is that good, he's going to be like more comfortable hiking mountains and possibly put more time and more effort in because he's not gassed.
Yeah.
And then specifically with the archery, like you said, like, I don't think that I'm necessarily going to be a better shot shooting my bow because I'm doing a bunch of back exercises to strengthen my back, but I'm less likely to cause injury while I'm shooting. I'm more likely to, like you said, be able to hold longer if I need to, and possibly hold steadier if you're doing the right type of proprioception type exercises, right. You know, balance type stuff. No, not directly. It's not going to make you, because the only thing that's going to make you a better shot is shooting more.
Right.
But, and that's another thing too. Like for me, and I don't know if you do this or not, but I like to do drills that incorporate the two, you know, the overwork, but is still doing the actual skill.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think a lot of times what you're doing with any type of training is that you're broadening your foundation, meaning that you're building your components, or again, your foundation, to be able to build more on top of. So whether that be, you know, like the archery example you used, or hunting's a great example as well, where, can you take someone who's not very strong and not very conditioned, and can they be successful to kill a bull with a bow? Absolutely. But what you're doing through training is you're expanding your foundation to be able to handle, you know, the rigors of hunting. You're taking physical exhaustion somewhat out of the equation, and we know it's something like hunting, there are so many uncontrollable variables. What's one variable that you can massively control? And that's the shape or your fitness that you're in, right? So if we can take one variable that's an important variable, our fitness, which equates to being able to cover ground, or being able to sustain the hiking and the hunting for day in and day out. If we can control that variable, then that's one more, I guess, token we have on our side, or one more thing we have working in our favor, just by utilizing that training.
Exactly. Cool. What are some of the things that I can do to ease into a fitness program geared towards hunting? You know, it seems kind of general, but
yeah, no. And I think that's okay, because I think the answer is fairly general. And what I mean by that is I think, like with most things, to what I had just mentioned, the foundation that you're laying is the most important when you talk about easing into something or when you start with something. So starting with the fundamentals, starting with the basics, and basics does not equate to purposeless stuff or useless stuff. Basics are the basics because they're the building blocks that are going to allow you to add to that. So as far as starting a fitness program for hunting or working into one, I think the predominant thing that needs to be developed is your base level of strength. And when we talk about strength, we're thinking our ability to push with our lower body, pull with our lower body, push with our upper body, pull with our upper body. Core work, carrying weight, and then just moving our bodies in general. Right. So those things can be simplified to really focus on the large components that are going to lay your foundation to make sure that you're comprehensively and well-rounded when it comes to your strength. I always explain to clients or patients that I work with that we take it for granted, but just standing up out of a chair takes a certain amount of strength. Just walking across your kitchen takes a certain amount of strength. For most of us, there's a very, very low demand of strength there, but it exists. When we start to encounter things that are more taxing, such as hiking up a mountain, packing out an animal, carrying gear, whatever it might be, those things take a level of strength. So if we have that foundation, we lay that, we can then now expand on that once we're comfortable, we're confident, we're prepared to build more strength. Then we can start to develop the conditioning to an even higher level. And then you essentially can build from there. So it's laying that foundation of strength, building the foundational movement patterns is very important along with that. So then you're primed and you're ready and have the ability to handle the further training.
That's a sound answer. I like it. You gotta look at it like holistically, you know?
Right.
I feel like just a good example, because you said push, pull, stuff like that.
Yep.
And I'm going to put it in a little bit more so people can understand.
Sure, sure. That
is everybody that I know that works on fitness, works on their ability to climb up a mountain, but they don't ever work on their ability to come down the mountain.
Sure.
You know, they're always thinking, it's just like the guy, we made fun of it a little bit earlier about the guy at the beach that's got an amazing upper body. He's got guns, pecs, and then he's got sticks for legs.
Right, sure.
It's looking at the protagonist and the antagonist, the both ends. I apologize for that. I didn't realize that was open. Looking at it from both ends so that you're not creating another problem.
Right.
Like you have major imbalances, that's where injuries happen.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Giant hamstrings and little quads or no VMO. And, you know, like not everybody understands what that I just said there, but if you're not balanced, then you're going to be worse off than you were. So it's important for you to really look at it holistically and say, okay, when I do X amount of pushing exercises, I got to do X amount of pulling exercises. I have to do, you know, if I'm going uphill, I got to be working on coming downhill. I'm one of those retards that are in the gym that does the treadmill in both directions, and people look at me like, because I'm walking backwards, steady, you know, on an incline. They're like, dummy, you're supposed to go the other way.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But, you know, because I don't know about you, but
I've never hurt myself going up. I've hurt myself coming down more times than I've, you know, that I can count.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems reverse, but you're exactly right. It's that eccentric, or for those that aren't sure what that means, that is the down phase, or the down phase is the easiest way to explain that. And that's where a lot of muscle soreness can come from, a lot of the load that results, because you're trying to slow momentum down. When you're going up a mountain, you're trying to create momentum and acceleration and force to go up that mountain. When you go down, you're trying to slow a load down, and that can be sometimes hazardous for people. I heard a quote recently that I really liked. I got to give credit to his name's Dan Stanton. He's the guy from Elkshape, but he said, "Don't judge a man by his quads. Judge a man by his glutes and his backside, because that's what helps you go up the mountain." And I like that because, you know, it's very true. You know, oftentimes going up the mountain is what kills, but going down the mountain is very, very important too. And he wasn't alluding to that it wasn't. But to your point, everything's got to be in equilibrium, right? Our body works harmoniously together, and it works in conjunction with other parts. That's why we have joints, right? Is to connect one part to the next. And each part has a job. Each part essentially is his own man on the team. We've all seen a workforce where a guy's slacking off, or, you know, he's hanging out, not doing his work, and the other guys have to pick up his slack. And just like those guys that pick up his slack, they get pissed off because this guy's not working. And our body's the same way. That's where we start to get overload and overuse, is because we're putting ourselves in situations or positions in which we overload, we overuse, because we're making compensations for things not moving correctly or things not being prepared to handle the demands that you're placing on them.
Right, right. And I know this might be a little difficult to do, and if you're not comfortable doing this, it's okay. But if you could kind of give us a sample workout that, well, let me ask you this. When you work out, are you a body specific per day, or are you a total body every day?
Yeah. Guy? Yeah. Good question. I'll say that I am a movement pattern specific kind of guy. And what I mean by that is I might have a day that's heavy on my backside or my posterior chain, which that means glutes, hamstrings, the back, where I'm doing, like today after this podcast, I had plans doing some deadlifts, power cleans, and hang power cleans. Those are all very dominant for the backside. So that movement pattern is essentially kind of taken care of with this day. The following day, I might do a focus on some carrying type work, where that's going to be focused on a majority of the upper body, or maybe an upper body push and pull combination, like a bench press and a pull-up day, or a shoulder press or pull-up. And then the following day after that, I might do a lower body push day. So maybe some squatting or lunging, some sled pushing. So again, instead of focusing on necessarily the body part that exercise hits, because the nature of what I encourage people to do, which is compound large body movements that are going to train your body comprehensively. There's so much overlap in the different muscles. You know, if I do a deadlift, I'm working every muscle from the base of my foot up my back to the base of my skull. So it's hard to say. So instead, that's where focusing on that, like that lower body pull, lower body push, upper body pull, upper body push, that can isolate or focus onto the movement pattern. So, hey, I pulled with my lower body today, I'm going to push with it tomorrow. Or I pulled with my upper body today, I'm going to push with it tomorrow. So I encourage an approach like that. And then going back to what I mentioned earlier, as far as like a sample program, I'm a big fan of staying simple and not trying to reinvent the wheel. And what I mean by that is you see a lot of people doing a lot of different types of exercises and trying new things and different things. And that's fine. And that may serve the purpose in some people's cases. But for me, there's nothing wrong with the deadlift. As long as you're doing it correctly, there's nothing wrong with the deadlift. And that's going to be my main staple for a lower body pull. There's nothing wrong with the lunge or the squat. So that might be a main staple for me for a lower body push. For an upper body pull, I really like pull up variations and row variations with different types of weights. For your upper body push, exactly what it sounds like, push. Push flat on your back, push in a push-up, push overhead. You have your upper body push. Then I'm a huge fan of carries, weighted carries, carrying any sort of weight, any way that you can. So again, the theme here being keep it simple. You're going to develop yourself comprehensively. It allows you to focus on mastering a few different movements rather than experimenting with a plethora of different movements where you're just going to become moderately comfortable and confident with a bunch instead of rock solid with a couple, which I think is the way to go. So to sum it up, stay simple, pick the large movement patterns that involve multiple joints, multiple muscles. The more it looks like something you would do in real life, the more I'm a fan of it. So again, I'll reiterate, we carry stuff a lot. Just before this podcast, right, you were talking about your kids. I imagine that once in a while you're having to carry them, if I'm correct. Yeah. So we carry stuff a lot. My dad just the other day asked me to carry something heavy from a hay bale, you know, so carry a hay bale from my truck all the way up to his shed, you know, just different stuff like that. We carry a lot. We pull with our lower bodies a lot, meaning we pick stuff up off of the ground a lot. We tend to bend our knees a lot. So that's referring to squatting and lunging in a lot of different ways. We don't necessarily push a whole lot with our upper bodies or pull a whole lot, at least in demanding variations. But to our point earlier, it's important to develop yourself fully and with a well-rounded approach. So that just kind of gives some perspective onto that and for my thoughts on what a program would look like. Now, I think it's, with all that being said, it's really important to highlight that there should always be a why behind what you're doing. I really value trying to be an open-minded individual to other people's perspectives, methods, ideas. What I have a really, really big problem with is when there is no why behind the exercises they're doing, the things that they're teaching, the things that they're saying, the things that they're advocating for. I hear it a lot with talking a lot about archery. You shouldn't do this because it's bad for your shoulder. Well, we need to talk about why. You shouldn't do this in your training for your elk hunt because it's not effective. Well, why? Or you shouldn't do this because you're going to hurt yourself. Well, why? So again, I think it's so important that whatever your goals are, whether we're talking about preparing for a hunt, John Stallone's getting ready for his beach vacation, whatever it is, you've got to have a why behind your methods and your training.
Yeah, no, I agree. I need to start learning how to write things down when things come up. So my brain, them. I had like five questions within your questions, but let me see if I can.
Well, I know I get long winded and I talk, so I apologize.
No.
Give you
no,
more you're breaks.
You're not long winded at all. I usually cut people off and ask my questions and ruin their train of thought. And my cousin Anthony, who listens to my podcast religiously, told me you need to let people talk. Really trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah.
But we'll see if it turns out all right. I don't know. Maybe I mess up my style of interviewing here. But so I don't remember what it was you were saying. It made me think, if you're looking at a hunt, okay, and the demands of a hunt,
yeah,
you're going 7 days, let's say, back country, whatever, front country, doesn't matter, but you're going to be hiking for 7 days and you're going to be doing basically the same activity for 7 days. Do you do things that in your training that simulate that? Like, do you do 7 days of legs? I mean, do you do 7 days of cardio?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I've got a problem with that, you know, trying to train for the hunt, but are you really ever training for the hunt if you're doing, you know, back and buys one day and doing, you know, lower body pulls and whatever the next day, you know, I don't know. Like, what's your thought on that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent question. And a really thoughtful perspective, on your end. And my answer is this, is that for something that extreme, like a backcountry hunt where you're going to be doing, like you said, the same activities in some capacity, yes, you have to train the way that you're going to perform. Now that doesn't mean that for a year or 6 months leading up to a hunt, I'm doing legs every day for a week or whatever it is. But number one, I would advise most people to do some sort of mock type hunt or build up to the hunt. And what I mean by that is maybe a month out from your hunt, you do legs 2 days in a row, or maybe 3 days in a row. See how it feels. Yeah. See how you handle it. Or maybe on a weekend, you take a weekend and you do a long hike on a Saturday and a long hike on a Sunday. I think that that's a really good idea. In addition to that, I have two more thoughts. The first one is that I think the era of bodybuilding has really gotten a lot of people's minds stagnant in the idea that you can't train the same muscle 2 days in a row. That is a fallacy. There is research backing that your muscle can and should be able to handle similar activities for multiple days in a row. Now, there's many, many, many variables that go into that as far as the type of activity, the intensity, the frequency, the previous exposure you've had to it. So there's a lot of different things that go into it. But let's take someone who's in pretty good shape. They've been training for a while for hunt-specific type stuff. They should be able to do somewhat leg-dominant type training for a couple days in a row. So I'll give you an example. This past summer, had an elk hunt scheduled for Wyoming. And I had days where one day I would be doing, I would squat and then do some hill sprints with a pack. And then the next day I would swing a heavy kettlebell and do a longer hike with my pack. Now they're slightly different, right? Squat versus a kettlebell swing, hill sprint versus just a hike. Slightly different, but they're certainly dominated by the legs, and the legs are certainly required to do a lot of work there. That's something that's very realistic for your body to be able to handle, as long as things line up as far as you've been exposed to that stuff before. Your intensity is considerable, but not ridiculous. Your movement is proper. You recover correctly. So those types of things, again, there's a lot of this mind frame that, or this mindset that you shouldn't train the same thing a couple days in a row. And that's just not true. You just have to be prepared for it, and you shouldn't do it all the time. But I think to your point, yeah, you should definitely build up to that for sure.
Let me tell you what I do, and you tell me if this is good advice or not, and if you agree with me or not.
Sure.
So my training, I've changed it many over the years, many ways, but what I've tend to do now is something kind of what you're doing, you know, picking a system, you know, and sticking with that system and then building that up in my build-up phase. And then somewhere along the line, when summer comes along, once I feel like I'm strong now, I switch to total body workouts, and I go from doing it, you know, 4 days a week. I start trying to do it 5 and sometimes even 7 days a week. And all I do is I'm doing the same body parts,
mm-hmm.
but I'm doing different exercises. So, you know, just to give you a quick example, if one set for me, okay, one regiment is basically I'll do, let's say, lat pull downs. I'll do sumo squat, and I'll do, you know, crunches on the ball, and I'll do back extensions, and I'll do seated military press with dumbbells. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is just arbitrary, but I, you know, every exercise I do. Okay. And that's one set. And I'll do, like, let's say 3 sets of, and I do fairly high reps, like let's say 20, 25 reps of each one of those exercises and 3 sets of each. And then I'll go to another system. So I'll have 2 or 3 of those within a workout. It takes me about an hour. And then I don't know, I'll add some cardio into that sometimes too, or I'll make sure I have no break in between each, and I'll just go one to the next, so that my cardio stays up. And the reason, and so now the next time I come in, I may do the same body parts, because I'm doing a complete body workout, push, pull, upper body, lower body, but I'll pick different exercises to do those same body parts. And the reason why I'm doing that is to avoid overuse injury, but I still want to work all the same body parts. So now that I can go 7 days or 6 days, 5 days, whatever, doing a complete body. Like and the other thing is I never go to failure. Because when I'm hunting, you know, if I get to a point that I'm fail and I can't hike anymore, I'm not, you know, so I do it so that I can maintain a certain level of performance without injuring myself and being able to do it over a certain period of time, you know, like we had talked about a hunt 7 days or whatever. What's your thoughts on that? And you could tell me that I'm stupid. I'm working. I'm asking as advice, because I mean, you know, I went to school for this stuff, but everything freaking changes, and I haven't been in college since 1998.
Sure.
So,
yeah, sure. So I won't tell you you're stupid. Let me clarify. So it sounds like you're basically doing a full body workout each day by doing just minimal volume for each body part to avoid overuse. Is that correct?
Basically. Yeah. I mean, I don't ever get to the point where like, oh shit, I'm sore. I mean, I shouldn't say never, but most of the time I'm not like, oh man, my arms are sore or my shoulders are sore, you know, whatever. I don't, but I do it to the point that I'm almost there, where if I would have did another set, you know, I'm going to be probably sore the next day
right.
in that one body.
Right. Yeah. So I think you kind of uncovered a really valuable principle of overuse. And what you described is, if overuse is the muscle doing too much work, right? That can occur in multiple ways. And if you picture, let's just picture the muscle having the ability to do, let's say, just 100 units of work. Let's just put an arbitrary unit on it. So if the muscle can do 100 units of work, what you're essentially doing is you're doing less volume, but you're doing it more frequently. So if you're doing 15 units of work per workout, because you're only doing like one or two exercises per body part, and you're not putting excessive load, meaning you're not going very, very heavy, it's low volume, and you're not taking that many units out of the muscle. Versus if I do a complete just montage on my legs, and I squat and I lunge and I deadlift and I leg press and I get on some machines and I do some running, you've used up we'll say 100 units of that, the 100 units that muscle could provide you or could withstand. So again, it's just a case of your case is less volume, higher frequency. And the opposite side of that would be low frequency one time a week, but high volume, if that makes sense. And both of those are going to more or less, they're going to fit the mold of not going into an overuse stage of the muscle, which, you know, we're considering that as far as when you start to get pain or you start to get soreness or whatever it might be. Overuse is sometimes hard to quantify for the normal person, but let's just say, you know, where you're feeling really crappy. So, you know, one other real quick scenario would be look at a runner, right? If a runner runs a marathon, most likely he's probably going to need a couple days off. But what if he spread that marathon across the entire week, 7 days divided by 26.2 miles? You know, you've got something like a little under 4 miles there. So you kind of get the picture with the idea that your body can withstand consistent work for the same muscle group or the same body part. What's key is that you're number one, that you're moving well and you're performing the exercise correctly. That's number one. If you perform it incorrectly and your joints and your tissues don't have the ability to achieve proper position and range of motion, different things like that, then it's going to beat you up pretty good. But if your body's prepared for it, and then also as long as you're choosing smart exercises and performing them in a way that you can repeat for those days, then I think that you're in the clear for most scenarios. Again, this is never black and white because there's a lot of things that go into it, but it hopefully gives, you know, everybody a general sense.
Awesome. No, good, because that's the way I looked at it. I wanted to make sure I wasn't going crazy.
Yeah, so to answer your question, you're not stupid. If that
Well, and for me, I feel like it's easier. Like, it's easier for me to be motivated to go more frequently, and when I'm not leaving going, oh my god, I'm freaking so sore, and when I wake up the next morning I can't sit on the damn toilet because my glutes are just tore up. I don't know, I feel like it's an easier way for me to stay in shape, and it more closely mimics what my end goal is, and that's being able to perform on the mountain for a month, or a week rather, excuse me.
Yeah.
A month. My wife would kill me if I left for a month.
Yeah.
Kind of training. That's evasion training or whatever you're eluding my wife training.
Right. Right.
But, well, cool, man. I wanted to ask you if you had any hunting stories. It could be related to the topic that we have.
Yeah, go ahead. Keep. I'm just thinking.
Or, or something that's more outrageous, or something that taught you about hunting a species of animal and changed the way you hunt.
Oh, okay.
Maybe just something that had some kind of impact with you. One of the ones that sticks out in your mind. It might just be what was your favorite hunt, whatever, but that's, and that'll be just fine too. But if you got one to share with us.
Yeah. It's if it's all right with you, it's not a specific hunt, but it's, and it doesn't take too long, but it's a style of hunting.
Okay.
That's fair. So I love talking about it, and I think it's very useful if people are willing to listen and even try it. But so I live in Western Pennsylvania. We've got a lot of farmland here, and one of my absolute favorite things to not only hunt, but just favorite things to do in general as a hobby is that with a bow and arrow, I love to hunt groundhogs or what are called woodchucks in some places. So what's unique about that is most people don't do it. Most people hunt them with a rifle. John, you said you were from New York. I imagine that you're familiar with groundhogs in some capacity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, most people hunt them with a rifle. Their eyesight is very, very good. It's as good as, a lot of big game animals, or turkeys. Their eyesight's very good. They're very skittish. So moral of the story is that they're difficult, very, very difficult to get within bow range. And then not to mention they can disappear down a hole and then you're done. So I love to hunt them, and I encourage other people to try it if you have them in your area for a couple of reasons. Number one, it does an excellent job of teaching you how to spot and stalk type hunting and how to move quietly and how to progress through either a farm or through some rolling hills or whatever it might be. It teaches you how to use your binoculars. It teaches you how to consider things like your background when you're stalking, when to stalk, when to draw, how to judge yardage. I mean, there's a lot of just hunting specific things that it teaches you. And the great thing about it is it's a very accessible opportunity to hunt, meaning that it's much easier to get permission to hunt groundhogs than it is other things. Groundhogs are in a lot of places, so they're not hard to find. They're hard to get within bow range and kill, but they're not hard to find. So there's a lot of opportunities to do it if you're willing to introduce yourself correctly, knock on doors, and explain what you want to do and why you want to do it. In addition to that, it's helpful to, or it often leads you to getting properties to whitetail hunt or turkey hunt on. So if you are from, I wish I were more educated on the groundhog span across the United States, but I believe they're throughout most of the East. So
they're out here too, but it's actually more prairie dogs, right, prairie out dogs, here,
which are different beast for smaller, sure.
A little bit smaller.
But you know, moral of the story is that if you have that opportunity, it's not only does it teach you a lot, it could potentially get you other properties to hunt other game on. But it's a lot of fun. You know, I took a buddy of mine who likes to hunt out west. I took him recently. He likes to hunt out west for elk and mule deer. And the one thing we're talking about is that, you know, you hunt for whitetails or you hunt out west and you're looking for one shot opportunity. Well, the beauty about doing this is that if you have a good day, and I'm talking a really good day, you know, some of my best days, I'll get 6, 8, 10 shot opportunities on groundhogs. And that just gives you opportunity after opportunity to practice shooting a live animal under a little bit of pressure in an environment that is similar to what you may hunt other game in. And that's so valuable because no matter how much you shoot a target in the yard, you know this, no matter how much you visualize or whatever, there's nothing like the real scenario. And that is a way that you can get somewhat close to the real scenario is by hunting this animal that has, or that can provide you with a bunch of different chances to to hunt and learn from it. Right. So I got to throw this in that people always ask, and sometimes people get turned away, that groundhogs are the only thing that I don't eat. So I do not eat the groundhogs that I shoot. A lot of people don't like killing animals if you're not going to eat them. My explanation is this, is that groundhogs eat a tremendous amount of farmers' crops. The holes are very dangerous to livestock. If a cow or a horse steps in a groundhog's hole, it will often break its leg. Most of the time, if they break their leg, they have to be euthanized and put down. And finally, the holes are very dangerous for farm equipment, and they often flip farm equipment. So no, they are not typically eaten, but they are necessary to control their population for the farmers' livelihood, their safety, and their animal safety, which we all rely on farmers in one way or another for our food and for our resources. So I think it's important to support them. And that's, you know, my decision to do that and harvest an animal that I'm not going to eat. They're, you know, in abundance. So,
right.
That's the decision behind it. I always like putting it out there because I always like explaining the why behind things, and I make sure that I have a reasonable and honest why behind the decisions I make as a hunter, or, you know, working professional, or a trainer, whatever it is.
Yeah, but it's kind of shitty that you have to explain yourself, isn't it? Isn't it kind of shitty?
Yeah, I mean,
I do the same thing all the time.
I think
because I hunt coyotes, I hunt fox, I hunt, yeah, you know, predators. I've gone groundhog hunting. I've gone prairie dog hunting. I typically don't do it out here because mainly because they carry the plague, and so like I don't even want to be around it. You know, but I used to do it a lot when I was younger. I used to go hunting for rabbit. I don't like rabbit. I can eat rabbit, but I don't like it. Right. And that's why I stopped. Honestly, I stopped hunting rabbits because I don't eat them. But if my kids want to go, I'm going to take them,
right,
whether they're going to eat or not, because it's going to provide. It has a reason, and eventually something's going to eat that animal.
Right. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
Coyotes got to eat, the snakes got to eat, the bugs got to eat. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not like, I don't go to church, but I'm a religious person.
Oh.
I mean, I go on the, I'm a, what I call Catholic light. I go on, you know, Easter.
Yeah, no judgment.
Stuff like that. But I know in my eyes, every time I take an animal's life, I chalk it up to it was its time to go, you know? Mm-hmm. I was the instrument that, but that was its time to die. God chose its time to go now. And then, and same thing when I miss, or when I don't come home with, you know, when I don't fill a tag, it wasn't any animal's time to go. And I wasn't the chosen one to be the instrument,
yeah,
at that time. So, you know, I mean, everybody's got to justify, you're taking a life, you know, you do what you need to do to be okay with it. But it just, I had to bring it up because it happens so often with me that I find it super annoying. that explain yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And it's okay when it's a non-hunter asking you because they want to know and they're curious, you know, genuinely curious. But when you have to explain yourself to other hunters, and it's kind of like a, you know, come on, man. You know what this is about. You're in this realm, and I shouldn't have it explain it myself to you. But anyway, I'll get off my high horse.
No, I think it's important. I think it's an important thing to talk about. You know, I'll add in it that it's again that why behind what you're doing, and I try to respect and be open minded towards the people that are asking and are curious. Some people truly want to know. Some people, you know, they'll ask you in a snarky, critical way, in that they think they have you pinned, or something like that. And that I don't appreciate. I think that if I we expect people to be, you know, open-minded of why we hunt and kill animals, then I think it's only fair to be open-minded towards them. But again, it has to come down to that conversation. And again, your reasoning behind it, your why behind what you do. And it's a conversation I like to have, because I am very confident in what I do and why I do it when it comes to hunting. So it's just an opportunity to I think educate and to open up a conversation that some people have never had before or have never considered or to experience a perspective that they've never heard before. So yeah, it's important to talk about. I know that it's coming up so much more as you know, conservation becomes more popular and hunting is hitting the internet and different things like that. So
no, I agree with you. And I don't know if you caught it when I said, but I feel like it's okay when it's coming from a non-hunter. And I enjoy having the conversation with a non-hunter because, like you said, it's an opportunity to educate. It's just when it comes from within the niche that I was specifically talking about. And the reason why I said, because we're on a podcast that is only hunters are consuming.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Sure.
And we feel like we have to justify what we do to those other hunters. And that's why I was bringing it up anyway. Yeah. But no, man, that was awesome. That was, I think a lot of food for thought for guys who were thinking about getting into it. Guys that have been doing it might think, oh, you know, I want to change things up. I think it was all around good chat. Where can our listeners find out more about you and Archery Strong?
Yeah, so we're primarily on Instagram at archery.strong. So again, that's archery.strong on Instagram. That's where we put out most of our content. Our website's www.archery-strong.com. So I'd love to hear from you. Love any feedback or anything else people want to seek as far as information or help. That's why we're there. Happy to help. Again, just to make sure that archers experience the best shooting they can and avoid any issues as far as with their body that's going to limit them from that. So we're out there and happy to help.
Awesome, man. Thank you for coming on, and hopefully you have a good season.
Awesome. Thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. Enjoyed it.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
You too.